Kurt, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Well, Jason, just fine. And you?
Oh, man, I'm excellent. What a life lived for Vin Scully. Absolutely beloved by everybody in Major League Baseball. And you had the opportunity to, you know, to write the book, the Vin Scully story. Let's go back to kind of, you know, how that came about and, you know, how many years of research and interviews went into it.
Well, it first of all was an unauthorized biography, which means that, of course, I and only I and my editor had final say over what appeared in the book. The research, geez, I would say 2 to 3 years of research, although in a sense I've been researching it since I was a little kid growing up in upstate New York. Obviously not hearing him on the Dodgers, but hearing him in the 1980s and 90s on NBC's Game of the Week, when I think his status changed from a local Southern California icon to really a national institution.
Well, and why was he so beloved for baseball fans?
That's a very good question. And I was on a program in Los Angeles today and was really struck, as I have been before, with the emotional attachment, the kinship, if you would, between Vin and his public. It really is astonishing. Vin began his career in 1950 with the Brooklyn Dodgers. When that team moved to Los Angeles in 58, he became their announcer, and he remained that announcer through 2016 when he retired. 67 years broadcasting for the same team. It is a record that not simply is unsurpassed. It is one that I don't think anyone will ever transcend, because it, you know, Scully's skills were so various and his appeal so personal and intimate and his love of baseball so great, and his love of knowledge. He often said that his favorite friend on a road trip was a book, and he read constantly, not about baseball, but history. He was a World War II veteran, having served in the Navy. He felt very deeply about the sacrifice that others had made. He also read voluminously about America, Canada as well. Always enjoyed his road trips to Montreal when the Expos were there before they moved to Washington. So he was the complete package. And what's fascinating is in the 7 or 8 years, not simply that, but over the last 20 years, number of people have, you know, asked me, well, who do I think the greatest baseball broadcaster is? And I would put that question to about 75 major league broadcasters, past and present, and each of the broadcasters said Scully. I mean, there was no doubt. There was no quibbling, no hesitation. It was so obvious, they thought, probably, that I was somewhat a remote by even asking it. But boy, he was the icon of baseball, doing other sports as well, including the National Football League in the 80s, doing tennis, and then broadcasting golf. Golf was, next to baseball, his favorite sport, because it allowed him to inject, I think, his knowledge of literature and poetry and things of that ilk that he could not in a faster-paced game.
And Christine Brennan from USA Today once said that, you know, for you to write about Vince was perfect because no one knows baseball announcers as well as you do. So what I don't know if, like, what was the intrigue for you so much with announcers themselves?
Well, it's interesting because it goes back as far as I can remember. As a kid in the 60s, there was no team in Toronto. So the nearest baseball team was in Cleveland, and their cavern of a stadium, which held no interest for me, or Yankee Stadium, which was a 6 to 7 hour trip to New York. So by necessity, I became a fan of baseball and the language of baseball and other sports from a distance. I had to. And we would get the CBS television Game of the Week with the great Dizzy Dean. Our announcers of the New York Yankees at the time was Mel Allen, who is may have the most distinctive and the most transcendent voice, I think, in baseball history. So this is, and language grabbed me. Language has always intrigued me. My two loves, sports and politics. I'm a former speechwriter for
yes.
In Another Life for President Bush, 41, George H.W. Bush, who also was a member of the United States military in the Second World War. And I loved it. I loved how you could utilize the English language to make an event sometimes more dramatic and more theatrical over the air than actually being there.
Kurt Smith joins us, author of over 17 books, and of course, Pull Up a Chair, The Vin Scully Story was one of those. Your other big one when it comes to baseball voices was Voices of the Game, of course, that you wrote. But Kurt, baseball I've always found is, because of the pace of the game, you know, you're allowed to paint a picture and tell a story much more than, you know, if you're a play-by-play guy in hockey, the game is so fast, there's really very little downtime, right? Like, baseball, and the other thing in baseball is you've got to be a great storyteller because there's so much downtime, there's no action. You've got to keep just a flow going. It's a very different type of skill set.
I mean, what you say is very incisive. Because, you know, Ernie Harwell once said of baseball, nothing happens until you say a word. And the pace was slow then. The pace, sadly, and very tragically for the game, is much slower now. So you get a chance to speak about things that interest you, to inject humor, to tell anecdotes that might be germane to the player. Anything you want. I mean, the show is yours. I love hockey. For example, Danny Gallivan, formerly, of course, of the Montreal Canadiens, and Dick Irvin of the Canadiens, but also Hockey Night in Canada, to me, were great announcers, and they're perfect for their sport. Mike Emmerich, who sadly doesn't do hockey anymore, I think is the best hockey announcer I've ever heard. But you're right, you couldn't find two sports more different than baseball and hockey, and it requires a love of language and you know, an ability to tell a story, to make your listeners listen even if the score is 20-1. Scully knew how to do that. He had a life, as I said, a lifelong affair with books, and this knowledge. He never stopped learning, never stopped growing, until he felt that physically, you know, he could no longer do this. He also had five children, 21 grandchildren, and 26 great-grandchildren. So he had a lot to occupy his time. But there's no question that Scully is the Babe Ruth, as an announcer said, of baseball broadcasting, and some other announcers as well.
Kurt Smith joins us. Now, Kurt, in your 2 years of research about for the book, anything you uncover that surprised you or that you didn't know?
Oh, good question. Yes, the environs from which he came, he never talked about this, he never bragged about the fact, but he grew up in northern Manhattan. He was a Giants fan when he was young, which I didn't know. The future voice of the Dodgers. And he, when he was young, every Saturday afternoon, he would sit underneath the radio in his northern Manhattan home. It was a tenement of sort, and sit under the radio, and he would listen to the roar of the crowd seep down through him. It absolutely fixated him, and he made, alone among I think among the many broadcasters that I've studied, he made silence as much a tool of his arsenal as he did language. And I hadn't known that. I hadn't known that his dad had died when he was young, and he had a stepfather that he loved very much, and of course his mother. But he had to work his way through Fordham Prep and then through Fordham University in New York, a very fine school, not simply to pay his bills, but also to help the family. So he really had an emotional affinity, I think, with the average listener. Let's say the average middle-class listener or anyone who believes in the American dream. That was Vin Scully. People at Fordham University used to talk about how you could tell him from a distance because he was always carrying on his back a giant transistor, a giant radio equipment. And he would practice there, and he was on the college radio station, then began with WTOP in Washington, and from there he joined the Dodgers. But nobody was a mentor to Vin Scully coming up. He was when Red Barber was his mentor, if you would, with the Brooklyn Dodgers. But this is a guy who really did it on his own.
Yeah, he definitely did. It was so unique, and the longevity of his career is one thing, but he maintained the high level, right? Like, to me, longevity is one thing, but and a lot of people, especially athletes, over time, there's very few who are able to maintain the greatness, and Vin Scully was able to do that for the majority of his career.
You're absolutely right. In fact, I remember he did retire, as I said, in 2016, because he was 89 and, as I said, didn't want to be a 90-year-old broadcaster. But I would listen to him, let's say, in the in 2010 and 2011, and I would marvel at how good his voice was. He took good care of himself. He didn't drink. He didn't smoke. A devout Catholic. So he led the good life. And he would use that to retain the voice. The voice is always the first thing to go for an announcer, no matter how you deal with it. But Scully mitigated a lot of things that could have endangered that voice. I remember telling my wife in about 2011, it should be unconstitutional for anyone to sound that good at his age. He may have lost a little, but, you know, 90% of Vin Scully was still better than anyone else in the game.
Kurt, are you, any books you're working on currently?
Well, I had a book come out from the Hall of Fame last year, Memories from the Microphone, A Century of Baseball Broadcasting. So I'm sort of still doing publicity for that, but I'm trying to figure out what I do next. For me, at least, and I think this is true of many writers, the inspiration for a book, the idea for the book, is probably 80-90% of the book. The rest is simply the labor, sitting down day after day after day. Last thing you want to do is write, but the first thing you have to do is write. So there'll be more. I just don't know what the next concept is going to be.
And you've had a fantastic career, specifically as a writer, focusing on, you know, the voices of the game and different ones, you know, on the microphone specific. Why has that always been such a passion of yours?
Because the language is what I grew up to and with. Both my parents were school teachers. One was a guidance counselor. The other was a high school librarian. So friends for me always included books. And I read a lot about baseball. I was entranced by the local broadcast and by the network baseball. I think in large part because the announcer matters more in baseball than any other sport, for the simple reason which you alluded to, and that is often there's not a heck of a lot going on the field.
Yeah.
Harry Carey, the great broadcaster, said the trick for an announcer is to know the difference between you carrying the sport and the sport carrying you. He said if it's 3-2, you stick to the sport. The sport carries the game. But if it's 21-1, he said, you have to carry the sport. And the great ones always have.
One last one for you, Kurt. As excluding your own, what are some of your favorite books that you've read?
Oh, boy. The Making of the President, 1960, that was perhaps the first hardcover book that I can remember by Theodore White. It won the Pulitzer Prize. I like most men's survey show. I like nonfiction books better than fiction books. So really anything on military history, I like. But the history of the United States, the history of Canada. Canada is fascinating. I don't think much, a lot of Americans understand that, particularly the western part of Canada, which culturally is, as everyone knows, is so different from Quebec, let's say, in the Maritimes. pardon me. But I like to read about hockey. I've got many, many hockey books, the Montreal Canadiens being my favorite team, although God knows it's hard for them to remain so. pardon me. So Stephen Ambrose is one of my favorite writers. He authored, really, the concept Band of Brothers. That was his term, based upon his book. It's a marvelous.
Yes. Marvelous.
He founded the World War II Museum in New Orleans. He did so many things, such an inspiration. I don't know how he did them. But Stephen Ambrose, who I'm sure many of your listeners will recognize, one of the great historians. Anything he writes, I sooner or later read.
Yeah, Citizen Soldiers and D-Day are two of my favorite books of his.
They're great. Yeah. They're great. And, you know, they're not books that you kiss off in a weekend of research. These are things that really not simply intrigued, but obsessed Ambrose. And
yes.
I think made for what is an extraordinary life. Anybody who wants to read a biography as an inspiration, just Google Stephen Ambrose, and you'll get your money's worth.
Kurt, thanks so much for joining us. Great book. Oh, many great books. You got 11 of them right now for anybody who's interested. Just Google Kurt Smith, and they will all come up. Of course, Storytellers. You've got Voices of the Game, Windows on the White House, Our House of Mics and Men. So many great ones, including, of course, the Vince Scully story as well. Appreciate your time, Kurt.
I appreciate you inviting me. Thanks much, Jason.